All right. Pre-recorded from Chandler, Arizona, it's the Gobeski Wallace Report. I'm Adam Gobeski.
And I'm Charlie Wallace. Today we have three. Yeah, this is interesting because one of them's here and two of them are remote. We have three guests. We've got Paul Wilcox.
Thanks for having me.
In the studio. And we've got Kevin Vredevoog.
Hello.
And Doug Gobeski.
It's a pleasure to be here.
And we're here discussing the 21st installment of the Sci-Fi Shuffle. It's the 1984 movie Dune. Dune is a movie. I got nothing.
Sure is.
Let me start that over. Dune is a movie chosen by our very own Kevin Vredevoog. Kevin, why did you choose Dune for us to watch?
Well, it was a little more timely when I first thought of it, which was apparently about 9 months ago. Nice. after David Lynch's passing, I've seen a lot of his movies. I have not seen this one. Just kind of felt like a fun one to watch that fit into the sci-fi shuffle, and again was a David Lynch film.
And now that you've seen it, would you still call it a fun watch?
I adored this movie.
Oh, okay.
I imagine I will be one of few people who is of that opinion. But yes, I am extraordinarily happy that I watched this movie.
So this is your core.
I think so. I thought on more than one occasion during this movie, it's like, oh, all those other terrible movies, this is what everyone else must have felt like. Like, I get it now, because I'm not going to defend it as a good movie or anything, but like, I am so happy that I watched it, and I would absolutely watch it again.
You can hear Paul's getting ready for his comments to get even.
I'm so ready.
It's mostly just that there will be no equivalent of the core, because I will be on the other side being normal and fair to all the movies.
Well, wasn't the issue with the core that it was like two people liked it, two people were indifferent, and two people hated it? So as long as we get somebody who's indifferent, which sounds like that's probably you, and somebody who hated it, then I think we'll be okay.
Kevin, had you seen any other David Lynch movies before?
A long time ago, I saw both Eraserhead and The Elephant Man.
Simultaneously?
Yes, I had them on two TVs, same time, cathode ray tubes. And then this, I mean, I have seen some of his, you know, I saw the first season of Twin Peaks. He had, and still has actually, a short film on Netflix that I highly recommend called What Did Jack Do? Where David Lynch interrogates a small monkey who potentially killed someone. Spectacular. So, like, conceptually, I am a huge fan of David Lynch. I haven't seen all of his filmography or anything, but I'm definitely familiar with him in general.
Okay. Well, I guess that perhaps brings us to a question for everyone else. Had everyone else seen this movie before, or was it a first time? I know I had watched it at least all the way through once. I might have watched part of it, like, when I was younger. But I know I watched the HD DVD copy at one point, probably about, man, might even be 10 years ago at this point. And having not read Dune and not really seen Dune before, I remember at the end of it thinking, I wonder if this makes sense if you already know what Dune is and know what the story is, because I don't know that I got it. It really felt like a Cliff's Notes of the book with key important facts missing when I watched it back then. And this time around, it made a little more sense, but I think that's partly because I had seen the two modern Dunes and had a vague idea of what the story was.
I would agree with that. That's the only reason I knew anything that was going on.
So I had seen this twice before, probably 20 years ago. And then the more recent watch was probably only like 2 or 3 years ago. And so this time I watched it with commentary on because Adam got me the Arrow Blu-ray of it. And I figured I could get some more useful information for the podcast that way.
Did you?
I feel like I did, although, as I pointed out to you, the commentary was leveled all the way up so that you could not hear anything that was going on. You couldn't hear the music, like even faintly, like the music or the dialogue, and I didn't put the subtitles on. So you all are going to have to help me with that a little bit, although my recollection's much like Adam's.
So you watched Dune, : a silent film.
Yes. The first time I watched this movie, I had not read Dune, and my experience was much like Adam's. The second time I had read Dune, and so it made a lot more sense, but I still sort of got the same impression of that. I was like, there's some stuff that you could have put in here which would have explained what was going on.
Who was willing to do the commentary on your commentary track?
There was two commentaries. The first, I didn't recognize the names of either of them. So I just looked up online, which is the better commentary. And the second one was a guy named Mike White. I think it was like a movie podcast. And seems like he knows what he's talking about. He says he's watched the movie over 50 times.
God.
Even Kevin doesn't like the idea of that.
I mean, I don't know. I've watched any movie over 50 times.
Really? Even as a kid?
I don't know. I guess that's fair. 50 is a lot. I mean, from beginning to end, like...
it wasn't like a weekly, every Saturday we put on Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
I would say not. I think my sisters usually outvoted me on stuff like that, so I didn't usually stare blankly at, say, The Little Mermaid 48, 49, 50 times in a row.
See, we had a united front in our family, so...
Yeah, I did not have that.
I'm sorry for your loss.
Thank you.
I don't know how to talk into this microphone right now.
Doug, had you seen the Dune before?
This was my first time watching this version of Dune. I'd seen the new Dune, the one known as Dunk, once.
Both parts
I have not seen
or just
Dune 2.
Both
I've not
parts
seen
of Dunk?
The second one.
Okay, so you only saw Dunk part 1.
Yes.
Okay.
I have not seen Dunk Part 2. Well, I guess it'd be Dune Part 2 because they fixed the poster by that point. And I had seen I think it was a Sci-Fi Channel miniseries. Like I picked up like a VHS version of it way back when.
Is that the one with William Hurt?
2000 or something. I don't know. I would have to look that up.
Okay.
And I have not read the book. And for reference... I have not seen any of David Lynch's TV projects, and I think the only movie of his that I've seen was Eraserhead, for which I was not the target audience.
Who, in your opinion, was the target audience for Eraserhead?
First-time parents. Charlie, can you
people who already had the child.
Or
couldn't
Kevin.
Have second thoughts.
No. I was going to say people who want to be deeply upset, but that's, I mean,
they're
pretty much first-time parents. That Venn diagram, yeah.
Paul, how about you?
I had not seen this Dune before and haven't read the book, but I have seen both new Dune movies. So that was my guide for knowing anything about what was happening.
So I think probably the place to start is with a Gobeski Chocolates report. I know we've got some double duty and some chipping with chipping for Charlie, I guess.
Oh.
But let's start off. I have a box of Oreo Reese's peanut buttery cream with Oreo cookie crumbs, limited edition. And since
these are the Oreo cookies or these are the Reese's cups?
These are the Oreo cookies with the Reese's filling.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah, we've already done the other ones.
And since Charlie and Paul are in the studio, they get to try this as well. So the packaging, instead of being a clear foil, it's got Reese's and Oreo look on it. And it says, contains peanut, wheat, soy, this unit not labeled for retail sale. Which I've never seen on an interior package of Oreos before.
Yeah, what? This package of Oreos has an outer cardboard package, and then the inner package is very similar to... how Oreos normally are. I mean, material-wise.
Is that just printed? Looks like a sticker.
No, it's printed. All right, so I'm opening it up. And it looks like an Oreo with a peanut butter shell. So I'm going to grab a couple and then...
Wait, peanut butter shell?
Sorry, peanut butter filling. So I'll pass those on to Charlie and Paul so we can all partake. Very strong peanut butter smell. So here we go.
Tastes kind of tag-along-ish.
Yeah, that's probably the closest thing. It's very reminiscent of a tag-along,
but
a
not
drier tag-along.
Exactly. It doesn't have the outer shell.
Honestly, it's fine, but I don't think it's mind-blowing.
Yeah, it's good. It just made me realize how thirsty I am right now.
Do we have milk?
We actually do have some milk if you want.
Yeah, we might need a milk break. No one. Milk break!
I guess I should go grab some milk as well.
Okay.
Since I've got Oreos that I will need to be trying with milk.
Yes, Doug, please go ahead with your own Oreo.
Okay.
What is this Oreo?
So I have a bag of Oreo Selena Gomez. Selena's chocolate and cinnamon cream cookies.
Oh.
And it turns out when you read the back of it, it says it's a chocolate cinnamon flavored cookie, chocolate and cinnamon flavor cream for one of the cream discs, but the other cream disc is sweetened condensed milk flavor cream with cinnamon sugar inclusions.
Wait, is this a double stuff?
No, I mean, you've seen them before where they have the two flavors, right? Like Smorios?
Oh, yeah, it's like a yin and yang kind of thing.
Yeah.
All right, got it.
It's a paler brown than a normal cookie. Like, this is like a brown rather than a black. Smells cinnamony. Smells all right. I'll give it a try. I don't hate it, which is honestly highly unusual for an Oreo flavor. Oh, there we go. Natural flavor with other natural flavor.
That's what I thought he was building too.
Apparently the reason I don't hate it is because they don't use artificial flavoring in this flavor. Because there's something deeply, deeply wrong with the artificial flavoring that they use.
Selena Gomez must have insisted.
Possibly. Try it with milk. Yeah, I mean, I can understand why they were on clearance. It's not like the sort of thing where you taste it and you're like, oh, I have to have this. I need more. It's more like just, well, this is all right. This is pleasant, but I think I might prefer a regular Oreo.
So it would stop you from eating the whole thing of Oreos? That could be a selling point.
Yes. In fact, the cashier said that I got a pack of these. I ate two of them, and it's just been sitting on my counter since then. They're all right.
Nice.
Told me that as he was waiting for the coworker to get a price check because it had rung up as $0.00.
Doesn't that just mean you get it for free?
Sadly, no. He had the coworker take a look, see what the price was, and also tell that coworker to remove the rest of them from the shelf because they weren't supposed to sell them.
Because they were out too soon, or they'd already deleted them?
No, these were on
the
clearance.
Oh.
They were deleted from the inventory. So
hope somebody got fired for that blunder. All right, well, thanks, Doug the Food Critic, for that edition of Cookies You Can No Longer Get with Charlie. We'll hear from Doug the Chip Critic later in the episode, but for now, let's head back to Doug the Film Critic and Dune. And I guess everyone else can join as well.
What would you like to hear about?
Well, let's start out with the opening fade in and out of the genuinely gorgeous Virginia Madsen.
I thought that that was what this movie was going to be after I saw that. And it was a different kind of feast for the eyes, as I learned.
Oh, by the way, Paul, how did you watch this movie?
On a plane, as David Lynch intended.
On what kind of device?
it was an iPad.
So you're really honoring the member. You're really honoring the memory of David Lynch.
Yes, I was. I looked up the whole background of that quote, though.
Because you felt bad?
No, because he said that in 2008 when, like, phone screens were 480p.
Oh.
And he later, I even found a Reddit thread that was something about, like, he actually kind of took it back later and said that, like, basically as long as you have good headphones on and you're in a quiet room and the device is in a comparable distance from you to kind of be similar to sitting in the back of a theater, then it's fine.
So did you check any of those boxes on the plane?
They were noise-canceling headphones.
Okay.
And it was a late flight, so it was dark on the plane. So honestly, I think it was pretty, I was paying as much or more attention as I would have in home.
All right, but this
What about your seatmate?
Yeah, what'd they think?
The seat to the right of me was empty. It was, so I don't think a lot of people were peeking the screen, but I was definitely worried that someone might have been.
Wait, why were you worried about that?
What if someone looked over at just the wrong time and they're like, what is that mouth thing?
You don't think they just go, oh, that's Dune?
If it's the kind of person, well, no, I don't think they would just go, that's Dune.
They would alert the attendant.
Excuse me, may I please move to another seat? The person next to me is watching the 1984 version of Dune. I've got to move.
They probably get that complaint often enough that it's pretty routine. You
the
know?
One with Timothy Chalamet?
Was he the fetus?
Are we supposed to say...
in the movie? Unborn fetus?
Are we supposed to say no, the one with the Twin Peaks guy in a wig?
Yes.
That's the Twin Peaks guy, right?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Kyle MacLachlan?
MacLachlan, okay. Yeah. No, it's too late. It's a dead bit. That DOA. Well, anyway, this is all straying from the larger point, which is that does anyone agree with me about Princess Irulan being super gorgeous?
She's attractive. Yeah, sure.
She's pretty.
All right.
I mean, there was a whole movie between that and now, so I guess I don't remember too well.
You don't remember her randomly fading in and out? That was the part I wasn't 100% sure what was going on.
Oh, yeah.
Like, she'd fade from view, and then she'd fade back in, and I couldn't tell what the difference was, and that happened multiple times.
A lot of this movie in general felt like it was probably a lot longer to begin with, and they needed to use a lot of, like, voiceovers and summarizing scenes like that. Like, it definitely gave the vibe that, like, well, we don't have enough time to show all of this, so we're just gonna tell you all of it.
And that's fine, but why was she fading in and out in the same scene? It had a real, like, oh, and another thing I forgot to tell you.
It's been a while since I watched Eraserhead, but I think that starts with just him kind of floating it. And, like, I chalked that up to it's David Lynch, and he thought it would be fun to make this person fade in and out of existence while talking. I agree with that. I didn't even notice.
I remember when we watched Elephant Man, like, and his mom's, like, head floating, or picture of her floating there. It kind of felt like that.
Yeah, that's fair.
I think that's, like, that's the weird thing about this movie is it's sometimes hard to tell, like, what's David Lynch stuff and what's Dune stuff, if you didn't know. It's hard to tell.
I wrote a note to that effect. That I wrote, very weird movie, but not sure if it's because the book is weird or because David Lynch is weird or both.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we get Princess Irulan, and then a lot of more info dump about people and characters and situations and locations, and really just everything that you have no idea what's happening. And there's just a dude floating in a tank.
It's this weird, like, combination of feeling like they didn't explain enough, but, like, constantly feeling like they're explaining too much.
Yeah.
You know, we have the weird dude floating in a tank, and then the tank retreats, and there's one guy with a push broom half-heartedly pushing the muck or slime or whatever he left behind, trying to, like, clean up behind him and doing the world's worst job of it. No backup, heart not in it. Would have been better if you had just left it there, you know, just left the wet.
Seems like an insult, right? It's like, we could have cleaned this up. We're not gonna.
We just want to stir it around a little bit.
That said, the gross guy in the tank, honestly, the navigator.
Yeah.
The guild navigator.
Yeah, the man a T.
Honestly, looked pretty cool. I think they did a really good job with the special effects.
Yeah, I definitely had the feeling, like, right out the gate, I'm like, oh, this is a David Lynch film.
What is the deal with the navigators? Like, are those, like, a special being, or are those people who are, like, warped by spice?
Exactly. I think that's covered in one of the monologues that they mutated due to spice exposure.
Okay, so those are, like, humans that have become like that.
I don't think in the books they get into. Maybe they do, but at least the couple that I've read, I don't think they get into specifically what they look like. Like, I think they tell you that they changed in some way, but this might be a David Lynch.
Oh, I see.
Running wild with his imagination.
Yeah, that's the Lynch part. Also, I feel like the broom guy is, too.
I think they do live in tanks, though. I think I remember that. There's, like, spice gas all around them or something.
Was any of that from the... Like, I read the first novel, just Dune, which obviously this was based on. Did this borrow from later novels as well? Because, I mean, from that, like, I don't remember monster people yelling at the Emperor or magic rain, spoiler alert for the end of the movie. Were those borrowed from Messiah or...
From what I read, the magic rain is an invention of the movie. I seem to recall reading something to the effect that Frank Herbert was actually very unhappy with that choice. But there was only so much he could do. Because his point was that, Paul, blanked on his name, while staring at Paul, ironically. I think his basic point was that Paul was meant to be a man playing at being a god, not actually a god. And so he found the rain thing at the end very frustrating, because that wasn't his intention. I mean, that said, I do think he was overall generally happy with it. I also read something where he was basically like, these are my words, and like throughout the movie, like this is largely what my story was. It's just that part at the end, I think, particularly he disagreed with.
It's definitely a troubled production. So David Lynch, from his earlier movies like Eraserhead, Elephant Man, got the go-ahead to do this, and he was working with the producer, Dino De Laurentiis. And because he had so much money behind it, there was just a lot of studio interference with it. In particular, Dino De Laurentiis was on set a lot of the time saying, like, okay, we can't do this. We can't do this the way you want it. We have to make this movie shorter. Like, you can't use these scenes that we shot, which, you know, he went on to regret a bit. I don't think he was like, maybe we should have kept all of that stuff. But David Lynch was always saying that there was this huge push to, like, the movie has to be less than 2 hours and 17 minutes, or like exactly what length it was, because they needed to be able to play this movie over and over in the theaters. And if it got over a certain length, then you would lose one showing a day. And so a lot of stuff got cut out of this movie or wasn't allowed to be shot to begin with, which you can kind of see all over it.
Yeah.
I don't know if that figures into the ending, like why they would put rain there. But
I will say, though, the minute I saw the name Dino De Laurentiis Presents, I was like, oh, we're in for a weird, fun B-movie time. Because this is the guy who brought us, like, Flash Gordon, Conan the Barbarian, I think.
Was he Red Sonja, too? Or
I think so.
For a B-movie, though, it had extremely high production values. I mean, I don't know exactly how much money went into this movie, but just, like, the set design, I guess, sort of, the special effects were good for the time. Like, it was visually very impressive, I thought. Pretty much every setting, I guess I'll say the caves weren't all that interesting, but the Emperor's throne room and the, fortresses, both on Arrakis and whatever the Atreides homeworld was, that was good stuff.
I'd agree with that, but it's also, and this is 1984, mind, but just like the very obvious blue screen that's repeatedly happening.
Sure.
Like the moment when Jessica and Paul are like crashing whatever, I don't think it was an ornithopter in this, but whatever vehicle they're in, right? And you can see like the ground rushing. It's so very clearly blue screen. And it's just like, oh, okay. No, this is a Dino De Laurentiis film.
Other stuff is quite good though, right? It's just, especially like the...
Oh yeah, the design's great.
Yeah, the production design's really good. Like all of the sets, like all the costumes.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
And they're not like generic, you know, white gleaming sci-fi or whatever, right? Like it's not that aesthetic. And it's nice how like all the various locations have like their own distinct look to them. So like Arrakis looks different from Baron Harkonnen's palace, which looks different from the Atreides palace and stuff like that.
Kind of fun to watch all of that too and compare it to the new movies and wondering, well, were the new movies influenced by this, or were they just all influenced by the same source material? Like how much overlap is there?
Yeah.
As someone who hasn't seen the more recent Dune movies, does Sting appear in a Speedo in those, or...
So that is probably one of the main detriments of the new movies.
Okay.
Sting does not appear in a Speedo, and neither does Austin Butler, who is playing the same character.
Right.
Although in my memory, I had conflated Baron Harkonnen flying with Sting flying. So in my memory, Sting in a Speedo was flying around.
Like a superhero.
Yeah.
I want that.
Side note, and I know what the deal is with the flying because I did read the book a long time ago, but in the movie, did they address at all why he just was floating around wildly? Or was that just something we were supposed to accept as...
This whole movie definitely has this, for me, this feeling of just go with it. Like, weird stuff is happening. It makes sense to the characters in-universe. That'll have to do. So in some ways, it's almost like an historical drama about a period of time we know nothing about.
Which is kind of cool, because that's kind of what the book is, too. Right? I mean, the princess actually starts off in the book like saying, like, oh, I'm sort of being a historian here, and I'm telling you about all this stuff that happened. And so the book does kind of actually feel like that.
Is it Harkonnen? Because I feel like I always had it in my head as Harkonnen, but... Is Harkonnen cross the board what everyone
that
has
I've
heard
seen
in
it,
future
heard
films?
It pronounced as, but I mean, listening to the commentary too, the guy who was doing it was going over the different pronunciations of things and like where they came from, and he's like, yeah, nobody's really consistent about the way that they pronounce it and all these different versions of Dune.
I feel better.
Like the actors can't get it, and
I'll be honest, when I was saying Harkonnen, that was a desperate stab of like, I think that's how they said it.
That's how I've heard it.
That's definitely how they said it in the movie.
Okay.
It's like, I guess you can figure out the original language that it supposedly had come from and try to pronounce it like that, but there's so many different origins of different things in here that it's hard to keep up.
It's a real melange.
Yes. You didn't like that, Doug? I thought it was fine.
Well, the problem is I can't narrow my eyes in an audio format.
This will almost certainly be a controversial opinion, but Baron Harkonnen was probably one of my favorite performances in, I'm sure I can think of one in the sci-fi shuffle that I liked more, but like off the top of my head, absolute favorite performance I have seen in my recent memory. I'm not saying he did a good job, and I'm not saying that the character wasn't repulsive and there weren't some questionably homophobic vibes coming through from time to time, but like...
Do you mean explicitly homophobic?
I mean...
Wait, hold on. What's this homophobia that I missed?
So this came out in the 80s. There's a guy covered in, you know, a pox who's first sexually assaulting, then killing a young man. I want to say Frank Herbert maybe also, like the source material, it may have been kind of baked into that he made Baron Harkonnen this absolutely disgusting individual whose characteristics also included being, you know, gay.
Yeah, that's, I think that's true.
Huh. Apparently I was supposed to read into whatever was going on with the weird assault and murder of the guy who was being held at gunpoint. And I was just like, I don't understand what's going on here, and moved on.
It was already kind of
pulled his heart
in my mind.
Out, I guess, so he's going to die.
Another thing that I love, that they just like, yep, everyone has heart plugs here, the end.
I know, that's very
well,
weird.
You know, you want to be able to kill the minions with a minimum of effort.
But didn't he also have heart plugs? What got pulled out of him?
The commentary said that
sister.
It's very confusing in that specific way because you think it's a heart plug, but it might have to do with actually his floating suit. And so that's why he kind of goes haywire after she does that to him. She pulls it out.
Oh, yeah. I didn't think that was his heart
plug.
I thought that was the suit.
The suit is why he floats?
They're like his lower,
he has like a lower nipple. It's like an anti-grav belt.
Is that like a future version of a Rascal scooter?
I think yes. Or possibly a, I don't remember what those are called. Those one-wheeled boards.
One wheel?
Unicycles?
No. The ones that are like skateboards, but they
I know what you mean. Yeah. I fell off of one actually a couple weeks ago. It was pretty painful.
Wow. You don't know what it was called?
Nope. Didn't ask. Just
damn that
very
thing that knocked me over.
Quickly walked away from it and sat down for a while.
So I do have to say, anytime the Baron was on screen, that's when my having watched it on a plane, I think, affected my viewing experience. Because I just was like really hoping that no one was looking over at my screen and seeing that at the time.
As his sores were actively being drained.
Yes, I think that was really when I was like, okay, like, can I get like a little viewing cone to kind of like get some privacy here?
But you were hoping they watched you when you were watching Sting.
Yes.
In a Speedo.
Yeah, that would be fine. Like, if it was just like that clip of him like coming out in the Speedo, like on repeat, you know, like maybe during some kind of like music mix or something on YouTube, like 7 seconds of Sting.
While Careless Whisper plays.
Yeah.
Just the saxophone part.
I do have a question about Sting in that scene.
Yeah.
Did he have chest hair?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
I think he was a smooth boy.
Because I thought he was smooth at first, but then it looked like maybe he had a bit of orange chest hair.
Guess I wasn't looking close enough. That's on me.
We'll have to go back to it after we're done recording.
Yep.
Brand just walks in, we're just like reversing that shot of Sting over and over and over.
It's like Blade Runner. Enhance.
And so in this movie, there's so much emphasis on like the sores and like pustule and stuff on his face that, so this is my first experience with Dune was watching this movie. So that later when I read the book, I'm like, oh, I just don't want to get to that part with all the pustules and stuff and them describing it. And then it's not really in there. I mean, the commentary said that I think in like future books, they kind of explain that. But, and certainly in the newer movies, I don't think Stellan Skarsgård has a bunch of boils and stuff on his face.
I don't think so. I think he's just a fat guy who loves being in the oil. He's a real Frankie Muniz.
I can't believe I've never made that connection before. oil. Huh. Maybe that's an idea for the future. I feel like we could make something out of that.
I think Charlie literally used a photo of Stellan Skarsgård.
I was looking for a way to bring it into the podcast and never really got the opportunity. So that
was the way. Like, that's how you can go back. You're like, yeah, that's sure. People will make the connection.
But I agree with you, Kevin, that I really like that performance. But between that and the visuals is like, I wanted him to be on screen more, but I wanted him to be on screen less. This whole movie, it just feels like a contradiction.
Yeah, when he got his good side, like the whatever his left, I think, side of his face, that was a lot better.
I did like that it even went up into the hair, like past the hairline, but only on the one side. Like, that was a nice touch.
I think I actually, in general, preferred the like ridiculous, hammy, like overacting, chewing the scenery characters. I mean, specifically, I guess, Baron Harkonnen and kind of at the end, Sting, where he was just kind of wandering around shouting, "I will kill him," for no particular reason during the battle. Like, those were some of my favorite acting moments in the movie, which was surprising because, like, you know, Patrick Stewart was in it. I was really expecting to like him, but he was, I don't know, just fine. I would not say the acting, by and large, was like the, you know, my favorite element of this movie.
Yeah, I think all the Harkonnens and their planet, like, it's all the same sort of, like, everything's over the top. So I think, yeah, that's kind of what you're responding to. And everywhere else, they're a little bit more subdued.
Yeah, yeah.
Or the guy who takes the cow's tongue out and starts chomping on it.
Oh, God, I had forgotten.
Just a real cow's tongue. He, like, had them cook it first, but he wanted to, he said, can you make it a sweet and sour? So that's what they did for him.
You know, did anyone else get any similar vibes at times to the original Mario Brothers movie?
Yes. Yes, that was extremely what was going through my mind while watching it.
I feel like they had to have taken inspiration, like between like Dennis Hopper as King Koopa and like just the whole like, you know, world.
That seems like a reasonable guess, a reasonable assumption.
I'm gonna watch that next. I mean, I'm not gonna spoil any picks.
Throughout a lot of the 80s, there was that kind of vibe with, you know, Alien and is it Geiger? G-I-G-E-R? Like, just that whole, future industrial H.R. Geiger. Yeah, I mean, it's been a very long time since I saw the Mario Brothers movie, but I almost got like they did a really bad job at trying to turn Mario into, like, a Blade Runner type movie kind of energy off of it. But I think, yeah, like, this certainly ties into that whole vibe once again.
But to get back to the acting, I actually, in general, didn't mind any of the actors. I thought they were all doing more or less what they were being asked to do. I think Kyle MacLachlan actually does a really good job of starting out as pretty, like, sort of wide-eyed and naive, and by the end of the movie, like, he seems a lot more grown up, I guess might be the way to put it. So, like, I really enjoyed, like, watching his character's arc. Yeah, that's probably, like, the main character that we really follow all the way through. I mean, we kind of follow Jessica, but she kind of falls away, like, through, like, the second half. And so we don't really get to see her as much. And obviously, we've already talked about Baron Harkonnen, so.
Yeah, a lot of characters get short shrift just because of having to cut a lot of things that you get to see more in the more recent Dune movies, but especially the book. One sort of short shrift, like I'm saying, is there's a character called Duncan Idaho, who's in this for like a minute and then he gets murdered. People love that character. That is by far, it's usually people's favorite character, like, in the book.
And
for sure,
he barely shows up in this at all,
right? Like, and there's a whole like he dies and then like shows up again later after you expect that he died and he didn't die, and like they play it in the new movie like oh, he's back, and like that's how it is in the book, and then here it's just like, eh, this is guy. He gets killed.
Having seen the new movie, part one at least, Duncan Idaho, definitely one of my favorite parts of that movie. And probably the thing that most made me realize while watching this movie, that this movie seems very light on characterization.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with that.
There's just not that much there about seeing the differences between the characters, you know, like you don't get a feel for their inner lives very much, their motivations. It's just a very plot-driven screenplay.
Yeah, that's kind of what I meant by saying that it kind of has this historical feel to it, in that it's just recounting events that happened. It's less concerned about, like, why people were doing what they were doing or whatever. It just says, well, this is what happened. But this is also, I feel like, a movie that's really focused a lot on spectacle. And I think on that front, like, despite the sometimes blatant abuse of green screen and stuff like that, I think in general it delivers. It's certainly, I was trying to think of a movie recently that would fill this same sort of like epic, we're just going for it spectacle. And I really couldn't come up with anything. Like, the new Dune movies don't really work on that same level of that like 80s sci-fi movies do.
And I'm trying to think of one now, yeah.
Yeah.
Prometheus, maybe? I haven't seen that since it came out, but...
The problem with Prometheus is that it's deeply stupid. It's a deeply,
yeah, no,
deeply
I'm not defending
stupid
the movie.
Movie.
I'm just trying to think of something
and,
with, like,
well,
big...
Yeah, but I think for me, like, no, I know. The stupidity overrides anything else that may be happening, because I'm just spending all my time yelling at the characters, going, why are you taking your helmet off?
Fair. I mean, maybe like Avatar movies? I mean, that's kind of what they're going for, but
maybe.
I don't know.
Yeah, maybe that's the closest analog in the last 20 years. I haven't seen the most recent Avatar, so I can't comment on that one.
When's the third one coming out, anyway?
Trailers have started coming out, so
later
it
this year,
soon-ish.
I think.
Oh, really?
December, maybe?
Oh, shoot. Figured I had another year.
Yeah, Patrick Stewart's in this, and he doesn't have tons to do.
Yeah, he's just being Patrick Stewart.
Being Patrick Stewart.
Which is good. I mean, I like Patrick Stewart. I did enjoy the very 80s effects of the shields.
And
how they're all like blocky. Yeah. Like, to the point where I was actually like, huh, I wonder how they did that.
I was a little annoyed by it because it made it very hard to tell what was going on.
I mean, that's fair, but I was just like, oh, this almost looks like computer graphics, but I don't know if computer graphics are really a thing. How'd they do it, Charlie? What'd the commentary say?
I don't think they really said much, except they thought it looked pretty good.
Worst commentary
ever. I know. But then they don't really... Do they bring it back? I think maybe once, like, that's not Duncan
once
Idaho
or twice.
Dies.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I've just had this memory that, like, fighting against Sting, that he used that, but nope, it doesn't actually show up. It just seems weird to establish it and not bring it back.
I mean, there may be a version of this movie from a parallel universe where Sting flies in just a Speedo and then has the shield up.
Yeah.
In that fight. Yeah, it could be.
And Quantum Leap's Dean Stockwell in this movie, the doctor, Yue, who betrayed them.
Oh, I don't think I realized that was Dean Stockwell.
It is, yep.
There were definitely a couple moments like that throughout this movie, though. Like, I did not recognize Sean Young as,
oh, yeah,
as Johnny
no, me either. Yep.
Until...
Wait, really?
Honestly, until I looked it up. That was when she had her hair pulled back before, like, they start getting, like, kissy. But...
Oh, huh.
But Dean Stockwell came and talked to David Lynch about making the movie, and he said, like, I don't think David liked me. He was acting weird the whole time, and... David came back later and gave him the job, which I think was supposed to go to John Hurt, and then he couldn't do it, but and said like
possibly
I'm
because he was filming 1984.
Oh, could have been.
So right around the same time.
And said, yeah, I'm sorry that I acted so weird around you. I'd heard that you were dead.
What?
I think he was just doing other acting for a while and just David Lynch hadn't seen him and maybe somebody told him something incorrect.
I heard that you were dead. And then another face that I'd forgotten was in this is Brad Dourif.
Oh, yeah.
As the Mentat? Is that what they were called?
Yes, yeah.
For the Harkonnen.
And so they have like weird lip stuff going on, I think, from drinking that juice or whatever they do. It's like, it's all spice stuff. If somebody looks weird, there's something to do with spice.
Yeah, that was in some of the narration, too. Brad Dourif, perhaps better known these days as Wormton from the Lord of the Rings movies, but obviously has a long and illustrious career, including a Star Trek Voyager.
Who is he on Voyager?
He is a Bajoran serial killer who shows up in a handful of episodes. He's one of the crew. He basically can't control himself, so then they have to confine him to quarters. He's killing people. So, yeah, I mean, I guess when you have eyes like that, you get typecast.
That's true.
But he does a great job.
I remember thinking, man, who's this Jürgen Prochnow looking guy? And then finally the credits roll, and I was like, oh, that was Jürgen Prochnow as Duke Leto Atreides.
I also think I got used to the modern Dunes pronouncing it as Atreides. And so they keep saying just Atreides here, and I was like, what's going on? Which one's right?
You need a pronunciation guide.
Yeah. Why couldn't Frank Herbert be more like J.R.R. Tolkien?
They handed out like vocabulary guides at the movies initially when it played, so that people would actually understand some of the things that what they were talking about. Yeah.
What the hell, a Quetzalcoatl's hair drop?
Exactly.
Hair rock?
I literally don't.
Satarak.
It's like Hodorok.
Hodorok, yeah. A Quetzalcoatl hair jock.
Quetzalcoatl's Hodorok, but hair rock.
Yeah.
Speaking of hair rock, who did the music for this? I know Brian Eno was involved. Toto, that was it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I actually really enjoyed the score for this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, to the point where Paul and I went to some used media places today, and I was half keeping an eye out for the score on CD, but didn't find it. But yeah, really enjoyed the music.
Huh. The music didn't really do anything for me. I was like, eh.
I mean, I'm a sucker for that 80s synth style. Score. So, but yeah, was a big fan. Just like I'm a big fan of like the Flash Gordon soundtrack, Blade Runner. It's good stuff. So
there's a lot in this movie.
Well, so here's the question I want to ask. We've been kind of talking about it, but dancing around it. So I want to confront it directly. Do you think audiences at the time who had never read the book would have any idea what was happening in this movie?
Nope.
No.
Yeah, I would have.
Not really.
Yeah, this really felt to me like we filmed your favorite scenes for the people who already like Dune.
Yes. Like all I could do was draw like shot for shot like parallels in my head to the new Dune.
Yeah, there was a lot of like this time around there was a lot of like, oh, he's the Muad'Dib or whatever, and I'm like, oh, I know what that is now. But yeah, the first time around I'm just like, there's a lot of words going. I just gotta kind of go with this, I guess.
I mean, there were so many plot elements that could just as easily have been removed. Like, oh, we need the water of life. By the way, that made Paul's sister, whose name I don't remember, be Aaliyah. Born too fast.
Alicia
and
Witt.
Also, now she's as smart as a grown-up. It was just like such a weird, barely important to the movie thing that they... Like, if they had to edit something out, it feels like they could have edited that out.
Yeah, I forget that's Alicia Witt, like, every time, too. I see it, and then I'll watch the credits and be like, oh, yeah, that is her. Like, you can tell on the face, even though she's got the you know, the hair covering on.
What other roles would I know Alicia Witt from?
She is in Twin Peaks somewhere. She was in, I mean, nobody would probably know this. Like, Sybil Shepherd had, like, a sitcom in the 90s, and so she was, like, the daughter in that. She's probably been in a lot of like more notable stuff than what I'm coming up with. Was she in Long Legs too?
What is Long Legs?
Having a real hard time with you guys being like, oh yeah, it's Alicia Witt, of course, sure. And I'm like, so, oh, what else is she in? What do you recognize her from?
I mean,
and the answer is
a list of even more obscure movies. Than
I mean,
what
Sybil
we
is probably
watching.
The main one, right? But I guess
perhaps
if you weren't
I mean
around
I
in the
didn't,
90s.
Didn't know if anybody remembered that show or not. Yeah, she was in Long Legs. That's the Nick Cage horror thing that came out.
Oh yeah, I think Brianne saw that and found it bizarre. But yeah, I know that Roger Ebert and Gene Siskel both hated this movie.
I believe it.
Roger Ebert said it was an incomprehensible, ugly, unstructured, pointless excursion into the murkier realms of one of the most confusing screenplays of all time. The movie's plot will no doubt mean more to people who've read Herbert than to those who are walking in cold.
That kind of feels apt, but like not bad. Like, feels like he's kind of selling the movie.
He gave it 1 out of 4 stars.
Oh, come on. It deserved better than that for the pyrotechnics alone.
It's at the time, I think pretty much everybody was disappointed by it because they were really trying to hard sell toys and things for this too.
Yeah, I know I saw it described at one point as Star Wars for adults.
Right.
Which I think misses the point a bit, but...
Like toy, like play sets and things and like a coloring book. There was like a Dune coloring book.
I believe it.
Yeah. We'll link to that in the blog. I mean, the guy describing it in the commentary was...
pustules.
No, like very close to that, Paul. Like, here's a scene of Duke Leto like paralyzed on the table or whatever, and you can color that.
Color in the poison gas.
I can't think of a single scene in that movie that would be a good coloring book page. I guess even the worms in the sand, then everything's just like yellowish
just scribble
beige
brown
on yellowish
it.
Beige, yeah.
There was one scene where Paul's using the whatever the whisper machine is or...
Oh,
what was that even called? I don't even remember what it was
the
called.
Weirding module,
weirding
right? The weirding module?
Or
something?
Sure. I was like,
yeah, that
oh,
was another
wow,
thing
is...
The weirding modules was just another thing I had to roll with because I had no idea what was happening.
Yeah. But the first scene with it where he's like fighting with the rotating, I don't know, jousting robot thing. I was like, oh, this is just straight ripped out of Star Wars. Like Luke with the lightsaber versus the little floating ball droid thing.
For the weirding modules, that is actually an invention for this movie, because what the weirding way is in the book is like being able to actually use the knife, and like it's like sort of like a martial art, and so they've replaced that with guns.
Well, they did a very bad job of explaining that.
Yeah,
because I was definitely watching this going, I'm sure this is from the book and makes sense, but I don't know what's going right. on.
It's supposed to be like a fighting style.
It's like a fighting style where one person is like brings out like, you know, drunken tiger or whatever, and the other person brings out a gun and shoots them.
Well, like the new movie does a very good job of explaining, oh yeah, you've got these personal shields that protect you from guns and stuff, and that's why like the slow knife can get through, because it's not going fast enough to be blocked by the shield. So it's like, well, why doesn't everyone just use those shields and protect themselves from the Muad'Dib speaking guns?
I don't know. In the book, I mean, then obviously not in the movie, but in the book, there's some deal with like, there's also a different type of weapon that's banned, like some sort of laser weapon, because if you shoot a laser weapon at a shield, it makes like an atomic explosion. It's something weird like that, where there's like a certain type of weapon they're not even supposed to use. Actually, probably an addition to the movie that I'm glad wasn't there. It's not an initial thing we didn't need.
I also found it odd how the princess keeps narrating throughout the movie, telling us what's going on, in addition to us suddenly having access to various characters' thoughts in non-obvious ways.
Oh, right.
Yeah, like, at the very beginning, like, I didn't really realize. So, that was only just an audience-directed thought thing. The inner monologues confused me because of also how, like, apparently the Bene Gesserit can kind of read people's minds or something.
I know what you mean. It was occasionally confusing.
But completely separate, though. That was just an audience thing to, like, kind of tell us a little bit, which, well, I actually sort of appreciated. Like, I didn't think it was too bad.
Because there's definitely some parts where it's supposed to be cluing us into something, but also in the story, Jessica and Paul can talk to each other without talking to each other, and so some of that might have actually been them like telepathically talking. And
oh, I see. There was telepathy thought, and then there's like inner monologue.
Yeah, it's all context driven.
Okay, yeah.
But yeah, in addition to that, like the princess just occasionally is narrating things despite almost not ever being like in the movie. Like she shows up in the background of two scenes and that's it. Like I'm sure it makes sense from like the book point of view where it sets her up as the historian. And I think like later on, like in subsequent books, she becomes like a bigger deal. But here it's just like random background character telling you what's happening for scenes she's not even present for. So what is going on? But she's still hot.
I did not pick up that she was the narrator. I was just very confused as to why there were randomly narration lines sprinkled throughout the movie.
Oh, I just figured that's because test audiences couldn't tell what was happening.
The commentary pointed out that she had one non-narration word that she spoke in the entire movie, which was father. Like she was just referencing her father or something in passing and walked by. Otherwise, she's just standing around.
Oh, yeah. So the Emperor, I mean, apologies to probably the actor, since maybe it's his fault, maybe it's the director's fault, but
Jose Ferrer?
I kind of figured that the Emperor of the Universe would be more intimidating. This guy just seemed like king of one of the piddly small European countries. You know, like the ones people forget even exist.
I kind of thought, though, that in some ways was like a deliberate choice, because it's kind of showing that the Emperor's not super strong. Like he has some authority and whatever, like with setting the two houses against each other. But I thought it was like setting up, showing us basically that it was plausible for Paul to be able to basically overthrow this dude.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
So you think it's like Habsburg type of thing?
Yeah.
Or it's just, okay, well, this one didn't come out as good as the originals, but it's what we got, so it's what we're rolling with.
I mean, that's kind of in line with what the story is generally, yeah.
Oh.
But there's no reason for you to know that. So it's either in the film or it isn't. Doug, yeah. So I get what you're saying.
So yeah, this is a very weird movie. I really like how it looks visually. Even when it's kind of cheap looking, it's sort of like endearingly cheap looking. And I appreciate the ambition that's going on in the movie. I just think from like a narrative point of view, it doesn't really work. It's a lot more enjoyable to look at. Enjoyable is not quite the right word given some of the things that are in this movie, but
entertaining.
Yeah, there's like a good spectacle that's going on. It's never visually, it's rarely boring. It's frequently incomprehensible, but it's really boring.
Like, I kind of think this really needs the reverse Hobbit treatment, you know, needed like at least one more movie. Or like if something like this were made today, I feel like it would definitely be a short streaming series, you know, with high production value, you know, maybe like 8 hours of content.
Except for the fact they just made two movies recently.
And a TV show. A thing that they actually did just make a TV show on HBO also.
Is that TV show actually based on anything?
I'm not talking about the things they made. I'm talking about this movie made today. Did they remake this movie?
I mean, they kind of did.
Yeah. They wanted to make a bunch of these movies. I think up to 5 of them even.
No, I understand what you're saying.
I think Paul. Colin McLaughlin said that he was contracted for like 2 or 3 additional films, I think.
Yeah, like all the modern stuff is made with modern sensibilities, right?
That's what you're getting at. Exactly. They're not making this movie today. Yeah. But if they did, it would have a slightly different format.
Adam, was your, what you said before, Paul, was that like your summary or was it?
Turned into that, yeah.
Okay. I don't know if you're doing that on purpose and the rest of us should do that or not.
Yeah, no, go for it. Unless the other people had things to say. It turned out I was wrapping up.
I mean, I have some things to say about these Doritos Collisions, Stranger Pizza, and Cool Ranch Chips.
Kevin, you can always bring your own snacks and so you won't feel left out every
time. That was a hell of a segue. No, that was the. I'm not even upset about the food. It was the transition.
Oh, wow. Okay. It smells reasonable. Let's give a try of what I assume are the pizza ones. Oh, that is way sweeter than I expected. Oh.
So it's not a pizzeria?
No.
That's disappointing.
Which is what, in my heart, I was hoping for. Oh.
It sounds a lot like Paul's description of the chips to me.
Yeah, I had some at home and I was not a fan.
It's too sweet. The pizza ones are too sweet.
Is it like pineapple, like Hawaiian style pizza, or is it just they added a bunch of sugar to pizza flavoring?
It's like somebody dumped a cup of sugar into the sauce while they were making it.
Maybe it was a ketchup sauce pizza.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, basically. Like, no, it like sweeter than that, though. Because like ketchup has this vinegariness, which this does not. So yeah, I gotta say, compared to what I was hoping it would be, very disappointing. Also, I got a bit of an aftertaste of a bit of heat in my mouth, which I was also not expecting. So yeah. Hey, look, it's our favorite friend, artificially flavored for the pizza flavored ones. So.
All right, how about the Collision?
Not natural pizza flavoring straight off the tree.
Collision, you mean like one of each at the same time?
Yeah, I'd assume we don't need a review of Cool Ranch.
I didn't feel like they were like Cool Ranch, though. I don't know, maybe it was just the vibe, but it didn't seem right. The other ones didn't seem right to me either.
I mean, we do get a decent approximation of dipping a slice of pizza in ranch dressing and eating it.
So gross.
Which, I mean,
everyone knows you put grape jelly.
It's not my thing, but
you get those little packets out that they left from breakfast.
Oh, like the so you gotta smear the rectangle.
Exactly. Over. You gotta ask them special. Hey, can you bring the grape jelly back out, please?
Sir, this is a Fasoli's.
Do you need me to run across the street for you?
That's fine. I brought.
Yeah, I think I'll be able to finish those, but I don't think I'm gonna enjoy it. So,
all right, thank you.
That is a don't buy.
One thing we definitely need to talk about before we're finished is the pugs in this movie.
I just assumed David Lynch liked pugs.
I think that's it. I don't think there's anything in the book. I mean, sure. I mean, all right, there's corgis, right, with
the queen.
The queen, right? And so maybe there's some like, oh, well, they did it there. We can put them in the movie. But just Patrick Stewart, like, with his gun, like, running into battle with a pug in his arms. Just like, what a weird image to have in this movie.
I mean, we're talking about a movie where we're milking cats for anecdotes.
So. Which is so
like
glad
overly
you brought
cute
that up.
Too, because like it was weird, right? And like conceptually very weird. But then you just see the cat with like the mouse taped to it or whatever. Yeah.
Was that the end of that plot line entirely? Like, just he gave the guy the cat to drink out of. And
yeah, I think
then
he shows up once in like the background towards the end, like in the big climax. Emperor confrontation.
That was another on the plane, me being like, please don't do anything weird movie right now. Anything
do not
than this.
Drink out of that cat.
Oh, did we talk about, was David Lynch in the movie?
Yeah.
As the guy,
briefly, yeah.
The miner or whatever. I thought he did a good job in that he always plays himself.
Right. Yeah, he's always, I always like seeing him, and he's always pretty funny. Like, and I think he knows that he's funny too, and that's what he can do, and so that he always inserts himself in the appropriate spot.
Yeah, he picks the right character for, like, what's a guy who just yells at the same exact volume at all times?
He's not Quentin Tarantino, you know? He, like, picks the right role to put himself in.
Cool.
All right, well, I summed up the movie. How about everyone else? Oh, I don't know if I explicitly said, but I did enjoy the movie as a piece of spectacle. It's not my favorite, but I didn't hate it. I just did find myself generally slightly confused, but I think watching the other movies made this clearer, which I don't know if that's an endorsement or not, but
I'll piggyback off of that idea, which is that as a movie, I agree that this is not like quote unquote good. It is borderline incomprehensible at times. There's just a 2-year time jump with like 15 minutes left in the movie. There's a million things that this movie could be faulted on. But as like an experience or like a weird visual thing, I adored this thing. And would watch it again in a heartbeat over Morbius or Dr. Mordred or so many other things that we have subjected one another to over the past several years.
You know, I gotta say, I disagree. I would rather have Jared Leto rather than Leto Atreides in this movie. Sorry.
Ooh, hot take.
So Jared Leto but as himself?
As Morbius.
Role of,
as Morbius.
Okay. That would have spiced up the movie. I will give you that.
As Morbius, the father of
I'm just on. I'm just on record as enjoying Morbius more than Kevin at the very least.
I thought, wait, were you suggesting that Morbius should have been in this movie? Like, literally the character of Morbius?
I mean, he could have gone flying around with Baron Harkonnen.
That would have been an amazing fight scene. Oh, missed opportunity.
Gosh, can you imagine? He would like come across Harkonnen and be like, my vampire powers allow me to like bite people and suck their blood, but I don't think I want to do that with this guy.
He's like looking.
You're
for
not even
spot,
gonna get any blood. You know? It's just gonna be straight pus for the first inch.
Release the Morbius cut.
Just pulling heart plugs.
Maybe you can ask
right.
Sora too to make it for you.
Yep, only a matter of time.
Actually, give it like 5 years, and you'll probably actually be able to do that.
Yeah, I think we're upsettingly close to full AI movies.
So, just to be explicit about it, Kevin, what did you adore about this movie? Just everything.
It's hard to just pin down. I mean, as noted, we've certainly watched some bad movies along the way. And
I don't think that's true.
I
think literally
I was
everyone's
never
been a winner.
Yeah. I would say...
Except the core.
That's just like your opinion, man.
Man. I was just never disinterested in what was on screen. And I don't know how to... you know, how to put exactly into words what it was, the cinematography, the brilliance in the awfulness, like having someone, you know, like almost like the equivalent of what The Room accidentally was to comedy, this is to big budget 80s sci-fi. And, you know, it does. It has a spectacular director, and you see that throughout this quote-unquote movie. But again, as a work of, like, narrative fiction, I acknowledge it is not good. And if I went in not knowing anything about Dune, maybe I'd have a slightly different impression. But as the greatest hits as envisioned by David Lynch, I think it was an experience worth experiencing, I guess.
So I think the order was I watched this movie, then I read the book, then I watched this movie again, and then I watched the two most recent movies. And so watching this again after all of that, I kind of like it a lot more. Because I understand so much about what's actually going on in the story, I don't have to pay attention to that as much. And then I can kind of go in Adam's camp a little bit more, where I'm like, I'm just looking at the spectacle of it. I'm looking at the costumes. I'm looking at the set design. I'm listening to the music. In this case, listening to the commentary, which is, you know, pretty fascinating. So it's kind of grown in my esteem a little bit. Yeah, and it is a David Lynch movie, right? And I always enjoy watching those for a lot of the reasons Kevin's saying. It's like, you can't turn away from it. But would I recommend it? Almost no one. There's better ways to get the story if that's what you're after. And there's better David Lynch movies that really show off what he can do. Yeah.
So this is for David Lynch fans?
It's for, like, yeah, real deep David Lynch fans. Not the first one you should watch.
And people who just want 80s sci-fi spectacle and don't care about the plot. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Sure.
Okay.
Actually, I really liked this movie. I pretty much agree with most everything you guys have said about it. Like, I almost actually wish I could have experienced watching it knowing nothing about the story. Because it is very hard to separate. I haven't read the book, but having seen the two new movies, it was really hard not to just be like, oh, okay, I know what that thing is, like, throughout the whole thing.
Oh, but, that's Josh Brolin. Yeah. That's Jason Momoa.
Yeah, like... It's like when you're reading, you know, the book and you see, you're like, oh, now I'm looking at, you know, whatever actor in your head, and you can't remove it ever. But yeah, I don't know who I would recommend it to, but I did find it really worthwhile and a good watch in its own right. But yeah, not something you necessarily watch for, I don't know. Yeah, hard to put my finger on it, but did still enjoy it.
This one's a really challenging one to think about because, like, visually, I feel like, as I said, like, I particularly loved the pyrotechnics. Thought they did an amazing job with that. Like, visually, it looks like the various things that they set out to do, I think they succeeded at. It's just that the movie isn't even that long, but because I had seen the new one previously, like, everything just felt like it was dragging in this movie. It was just like, all right, now we have to do this plot beat, now we have to do the next plot beat. You're just moving from plot beat to plot beat without really, like, I needed the characterization to keep me interested, and because it wasn't there, it made it a very difficult watch for me. Like, I probably would have just turned it off and, you know, not picked it back up maybe 30-40 minutes in if I hadn't been watching it for the podcast. It's interesting, certainly. Like, I think if I were to choose who should watch this, it would be Dune super fans and probably David Lynch super fans and film students, because I think it's probably worthwhile to analyze it to see, you know, how is it a product of its time and what works and what doesn't work. But as just a pure entertainment product, the only reason why I enjoyed it at all is because I had seen other versions of the story that were made since this movie came out. So they probably owe a debt to this movie. Like, I don't know that they would have been as good as they were had this movie not been made, but, like, I don't think it would have been enjoyable at all if I had gone in completely cold. I would have just been utterly bewildered, wouldn't have understood anything, would have just been like, oh, big worm, and that would be it.
So really what I'm hearing is that you really want, like, the drunk history version of this, where you just get an academic drunk and they describe the story of Dune and then just occasionally people act it out.
Well, you mean like this movie recut as that?
Yeah, basically.
Like with this footage?
Yes.
I also want to point out that in Doug's final thoughts there, it's the first time anyone in this entire podcast recording has said the word worm or referenced the worms in Dune at all.
I guess that's true. No, we talked a bit about Paul not wanting to have someone look at a big worm.
I guess, yeah. I don't know if we have anything to say about them, but do we want to say anything?
I mean, they're cool. Fine, yeah. They're fine. Yeah, I like the worm design. Yeah. I had questions about how it worked a little occasionally. Like, so this worm just chills and lets them stab their way up to its back. Okay, cool, I guess.
Yeah.
All right. Paul, you look like you want to say something.
Yeah, not really. I liked the worms. I liked when they gathered, you know, and we're all just like looking at each other. That was a really special, like, tender moment, I feel like, with the worms.
Yeah, they'd found their worm god, their worm leader.
We all kind of hope to be
that. That's a subject for the God Emperor of Dune movie, if it ever happens.
There was one moment I really liked where Paul and Stilgar were on top of the worm and they were riding it, and it kind of felt like a surfing movie or something, where they both kind of looked at each other. And I almost thought they were going to, like, give each other a thumbs up or something.
Elvis just comes in and starts singing.
Just toss a shaka at each other. All right, well, thanks Kevin for having us watch Dune. It sounds like in general we did not hate it. So
you are so dang welcome.
So since I am not currently on Charlie's computer, I just have to do Wheel of Names on my phone, but Paul's here to keep me honest so he can see that it says Adam, Doug, and Paul. So here we go.
Oh dear.
And it is
Doug.
Doug, you have been selected on wheelofnames.com.
Oh, geez. 2022's Mad God.
Oh, I do want to see that one.
Yeah, I have been interested in watching that as well.
All right. I guess we're going to do Mad God, the 2022 film.
All right. For another edition of the Gobeski Wallace Report, my name's Charlie Wallace.
I'm Adam Gobeski, and thanks to our three guests, Paul Wilcox.
It's a pleasure.
Doug Gobeski.
Thanks for having me.
And Kevin Vredevoog.
Yeah, it's been fun.
All right. Mad God.
Mad God.
I mean, it's no Wing Commander. But...
it's going to be our second stop motion movie.
That's our show. Don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook, just like the Gobeski Wallace Report. And you can also follow us on Twitter, at GW Report.
And check out our website, thegobeskiwallacereport.com.
That's probably the important bit.
Well, yeah, I guess all the other links are there, so if you remember one thing, remember that.
Not your name, but GobeskiWallaceReport.com.
More important than your name.
Be right back.
Hold it up and show me, because there's also some expired. I don't know what the... yeah. Right. In the front. Hold it up to me. Nope, that's expired. Is it sealed? Then, yeah, that's the one. I'm okay. But if you want to...
I got wind, got water.
Bring me a pop. Bring me a Coke Zero.
I thought everybody was going to have a milk break.
I don't think that anyone can hear you, Charlie.
So,
I can.
You can hear him?
I can. He thought everyone was going to have a milk break.
Okay, good.
Just him.
Good. I'm glad we can boost that for the final product. That's why it's a good thing we're pre-recorded from Chandler, Arizona.
I assume this is all going to be it.
Does that mean other people did not go for a milk break?
Our milk break is watching Charlie milk break.
Oh, milk truck just arrived.
I hate you so much. I hate that meme so much.
Wait, really?
There's coasters if you want.
I thought we all loved that. This whole time I thought we all loved that.
What the hell are you saying?
You thought we all loved
it? I understood him. He said this whole time he thought we all loved it.
Just like as a
that meme.
As a species?
Yeah. Sorry, I can't stop eating these. And I don't...
I was saying we just had Chinese food for dinner, and then we were discussing donuts during dinner, and Paul really wanted a donut. Is this hitting the spot?
No, but it'll do. I mean, it is hitting a spot, not the donut spot. The donut spot's still there.
Three boys in a room.
Donut break.
Okay, I'm going to need a little bit of help here. Do we have any preferences on decades?
What are our options?
2020s, 2010s, 2000s.
Wait, where are
I want 2010s.
2010s.
Now Tane I can get
Can
into.
I get a Flargen Stomp? And a right. Hat Wobble?
So what are our options? Give us options. What are the options on decades?
Let me think. I got one from 90s, 2000s, 2010s, and 2020s.
My vote's for the 90s.
You guys interested in, like, serious or, like, not serious?
Yeah, we could do serious. We've done a few not. I mean, this one notwithstanding, we've done some non-serious ones recently.
Well, we did the core and trancers, but we also did seconds.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Well.
But no, I would agree. There's a lot more. There's a lot fewer serious movies than otherwise on the last few.
I respectfully disagree okay. in regards to the core, but...
And does it need to be a good movie?
No.
It would be a All nice right. change of pace, but...
All right, it sounds like we're going to watch Wing Commander.
Oh my gosh, all right.
Commander.
The 1999 what? Film? 98?
All right, I don't know too much. I wouldn't have guessed it was 99, wow.
Yeah, 1999. From one adaptation to another. 1999's yep. Wing Commander.
Ooh, Freddie Prinze Jr.
Would you like to take another step?
This is what we're doing. 1999's Wing Commander.
What if I'm having second thoughts about it?
You shouldn't have said it.
No. Why?
We can still edit it.
Do you actually want to change it?
Kind of.
All right, go for it.
Wait. Did you think of a better movie or a worse movie?
I'm excited either way.